The Indigenous Literacy Foundation has spent years working with remote Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities across the country to create books, resources and programs First Nations kids can see themselves, their culture and their languages in. And now that work has been recognised on the world stage, with the charity winning a major international award for children's and young adult literature, worth $725,000. I spoke to Ben Bowen, the CEO of ILF, about what this win means.
Look, it is exciting. We feel still that we're a little pocket in this part of the world, and to be on the global stage at this level is just mind-blowing for us. But what we keep saying is this is not an achievement for the operations of the ILF. This is for the entire embodiment of the ILF. And there's 427 communities that are partnered with us. There's, you know, individual donors, thousands of them that give to us monthly and weekly. There's corporations that partner with us. And so we're all trying to get this massive message out to say this is everyone's laureate or award that's been part of the ILF, whether you were, you know, a volunteer 10 years ago or whatever it is, this is the award for everyone that's just acknowledging the entirety of the organisation.
It reminds me of when Archive of Our Own, which is a fan fiction website, the website itself won an award for the way in which its database kind of functions. Yeah. And every single fan fiction writer from then on claimed... which is actually a really valid thing for them to have said, because that database doesn't function without the users.
And that's what we're looking at. I was talking to our team yesterday, and we had a catch up, and I said, and they were going, how do we do this? And I'm like, I would love in those 427 communities for kids to be running around celebrating the fact that they're the 2024 laureate, like, because they're the ones doing the work. Like, this is, you know, for us to stand up there and, you know, take photos and do all these talks. It is. It's almost like a hoax for us, because we're not doing the work, and all these communities are the ones and partners are just there doing heavy lifting every day. So congratulations to all the laureates. They're the real winners out here.
What kind of impact do you think having an award like this actually brings for ILF?
One, the money. Money's always a good thing, and money keeps the lights on. We are not government funded, so we are purely funded by, you know, individual donors, small corporations, big corporations, partners that funnel money straight to, or invest this money is a better word for it, straight to these community projects. This independence allows us to actually be fully community led. So a lot of the times we talk about this stuff that we have an ethical fundraising policy. We don't take money from unethical organizations, but more importantly, we have transparency. So if an organisation funded a project, we go to that community and say, this is where the money comes from, and they've got the right to say yes or no. That is purely the independence of this community publishing. So for us to have this untied ALMA money, which is the investment into this, that's what we really want to build, is understanding this is a movement for lots of people, thousands of people and organisations that are supporting this investment. But the attention this award brings is... we can't capture it. I've spent the last 24 hours on Swedish news and German news and throughout Asia and everything, and we're loving it. We're loving the conversations with First Nations people around the world about the work that our First Nations people here are doing.
You guys are collaborating with 427 remote Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities all across the country, creating books, resources and programs that are, I mean, well, allowing First Nations kids to see themselves, their cultures and their languages in the books that they're reading. I would love to hear why you think that's important.
Look, our communities are so diverse. There's not something that nothing transcends every community. And I think that's a really important part here. So when we're talking about our kids, mainstream media doesn't speak to them directly. They'll hear stories about everyone else, and they'll try to fit themselves in as, unfortunately, not the main character, but as a support character. And that's a very, very big difference that we sort of look at. So the language we use is this black voice to a black ear. That is unique. So we are the oldest oral storytellers. We have this richness that, and I mean, growing up, I remember yarns that go for days and, you know, these rich stories that are just this tapestry that you don't know where it ends and it just keeps evolving and you become so immersed in them that it's almost like swimming down a river. You know, that experience, that's what we want publishing to be. We want our kids to have that richness of the oral storytelling, but these books to invoke that same emotion and journey, but then bring them back onto country and back to their elders for further learning. Like, that's this piece. To be honest, we haven't seen it. I remember growing up down here, I remember the Devil Dingo story, and I remember that because that's connected up to my pop's part of the family up there. And I remember reading that book and loving it, but there was nothing else to it. There was nowhere else to connect it back to. So it became this little isolation pod to read. Our communities don't read in isolation. They read as a group. You know, our kids were, you know, I remember telling this story the other day that we saw a kid with a book and they were throwing it up in the air like an AFL ball and kicking it. And it was this beautiful sight of watching this child explore their environment with a book in hand, not in a traditional sense that we would look at. And then they sat on the side of the field and the book was off to their side at their hip and they were flicking through the pages, looking at it, but then engaging and was going, that's it. You know, our communities having the confidence to engage in these things and make it their own. Like, that's what's so important about the Black publishing space.
You've said a little already about the ways in which you've seen Black publishing change over the years. Because we're very much in the midst of a movement. Like, this isn't a moment, this isn't a renaissance, it's a movement yes. of Black publishing. What are the things that you're noticing in particular?
There is a huge shift in this space. The biggest one we do have is traditionally creator writes a book, editors come in and they have an eye for what the audience need and then we shape and mould and fix that book up to get it out to the mainstream market. This Black publishing space, or whatever we want to call it, we're seeing the creators having this autonomy over the story, the way they want to tell it. And that powerful thing that we keep centering within all of our conversations is when an elder or a community member is telling that story around the campfire, sometimes they embellish, sometimes they pull back, sometimes they change a story, but the way they deliver it is just as important that time. So understanding that piece, that the editor's role is not there to polish it out, it's there to facilitate the story onto the page. And as we said, to go from a 2-3 day yarn onto 20 pages, there's a lot of ideas that get drop off. But, you know, how do we bring all of that stuff and ensure that the story's told the right way by the people who are, you know, and they're not just the storyteller, but they're the story holders. They're those sort of custodians. And that's a really, really important space for us to start to understand that it's not just our job to polish to a mainstream. It's our job to be telling these stories in the most responsible way as well. But look, we've also got challenges. And these are the things we're having conversations with. We may have 10 people in a room. Three people might write the story. We will acknowledge all 10 of those creators because that's the way the story came about. So we have 10 authors on a book. A lot of award systems, luckily not the ALMA, but a lot of award systems will only allow us to be eligible if we've got one or two authors. It may only allow us to, if we've got an author's name that's under 10 characters. And as you know, in a lot of our communities, so we get eliminated from a Black publishing space to a lot of these bigger conversations. And we're starting to advocate and challenge that space to sit there and go, these stories need to be told, they need to be celebrated, they need to be held up, and we don't need any more barriers to be celebrating these books.
I mean, it is actually absurd to think that, or to know that there's a character limit on someone's name in order to be eligible. That's, yeah.
Look, but I think this is, it sounds ludicrous to us, and to be honest, a lot of the awards, when we point it out, they're horrified that when it gets pointed out and they do fix it up. But it's once again that we sit there going, those simple mistakes, people, we see them, you know, and when we see them, we think, well, that's not a space for us. We need to be challenging that and making sure there's no barriers to be included in those spaces and just be there and celebrating the great story writing that's going on.
What gap do you see the Indigenous Literacy Foundation filling within the space of publishing?
We service community priorities, which is, that's a very general term. And we do that because we service remote communities, and it's understanding their needs, and every community is slightly different. So the three main functions we do is a book supply program, which is about 130,000 books that go out each year to remote communities. Over 50% of those are Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander creators, which means we get about 1,100 books submitted from all Australian publishers. For that list, we get a committee of blackfellas and book industry experts and community members all to come in and select those titles each year. So it's a curated list, which then goes out, which is then actually, we found out last year, is supporting the book industry and the publishers to take the gamble on more black authors because they know we'll pick them up at that scale. We also do a book buzz program, which goes out to about just over 100 communities, which is really the early childhood, which is just putting play packs together with books that are themed to just get, you know, Nan and Pop and Uncle and Auntie all down on the ground reading and fun and just engaging kids around books can take you on this adventure. But supporting other community members about how to do that reading with kids, because we know that's the critical point. But then we do the publishing, and the publishing is the, I'd say, the love piece of the ILF, that community bring us in and they give us these most amazing stories and they're hilarious. And, you know, we have to tread lightly because they are our family as well. I won't say the community, but I remember doing a story last year and we were trying to record this story about these elders who were saying, you know, they wanted to tell a really important story about when they were kids and the importance of listening to elders, because all the kids don't listen to their elders now and do what they want and all this. And we all know this story. And then these two aunties are going through this story about how they walked across probably 3 days of rainforest country, very dangerous walk. And then they framed it at the end after they told us this story for about 3 hours and we recorded it, that we said, so what made you go? And they went, oh, actually, our parents told us not to go, but we wanted to go down there because we were going to a big dance. And we're sort of sitting there going, oh, so this story is about young people listening to their elders and doing what they're told, but you're, and then we ended up getting in trouble off our own elders there, and then they changed the story. And we're sitting there going, but this is the beautiful thing, that these stories don't sit in isolation, that people want to tell a story, and it's all embedded that these guys walked across the rainforest for 3 days, but they're talking about these camping sites that the old fellas used to use, but then they're talking about the foods they used to use and where they got water and when they got... And then all this came out, and then suddenly they're doing a food bush food diary and all this sort of stuff. And then suddenly there's a language program that they're going to do with the kids. And then now they're talking about, well, we'll take these kids to these camps and we'll reinvigorate these camps on country. And then we can do. So suddenly we sit there going, these stories that are confusing and we get in trouble for picking a little bit of truth out of there or asking a bit of truth about it. And then suddenly they just become this bigger part of community that leads them onto this journey. That's what the publishing is. It's the book is one part of it, but to see these kids and elders publish and have their book in language in their hand is amazing. To sit there, and another story we had was Shorty Creek with the kids, the primary school kids from Shorty that are now in high school. They came down last year to our Indigenous Literacy Day and they sung the song for their book at their opera house in front of a packed room and live streamed to over 300,000 people around the country. But then they went up to Kinyukunya in Sydney and they did a live book signing as authors, and they're sitting at this table, these little young little black fellas from Barunga, and they're sitting there, the lineup of people who bought their book to come and sign there. That's what it's about for us, is just that joy, that experience, and something that people take away for the rest of their life, that, you know, these kids going to high school, we're not talking about what's the literacy gap. We're not talking about close the gap. We're talking about these are published authors now that are starting high school. That's what the Literacy Foundation is about.
Ben Bowen there. He's the CEO of the Indigenous Literacy Foundation. You can find out more about the ILF by heading to their website, indigenousliteracyfoundation.org.au. We'll, of course, have links in our show page too.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.